It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll find out what's next now that a guilty verdict's been reached in the trial of the surviving Boston Marathon bomber.
First, just one day after Wisconsin voters showed their support for a constitutional amendment that paves the way for the state Supreme Court to elect its chief justice, the current chief announced she's fighting back.
The conservative majority on the court is expected to vote off the current chief justice, Shirley Abrahamson, but yesterday, Abrahamson filed a federal lawsuit to block that effort. She says removal from her position before her term is over is a violation of her constitutional rights.
Joining us now to discuss Abrahamson's challenge and what's at stake here is Howard Schwaber. He's a professor of political science and legal affairs at UW-Madison. Howard, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, my pleasure.
So Chief Abrahamson is filing this lawsuit. She says switching now would be an infringement of her constitutional rights. What exactly is she challenging in this case?
Well, she's making a couple of claims, and I have to say that one of them is just terrifically dear to the heart of anyone who teaches constitutional law, because it goes all the way back to 1803 and Marbury versus Madison. We remember that case as the most famous case about judicial review, but what it was specifically about was a judge who'd been offered a position on a bench, and then the new administration refused to deliver it. And he claimed, and the Supreme Court agreed, that he had a property right in that judicial position. So Abrahamson is in part arguing that she has a property right to be Chief Justice, in the same way that one would have a right to owning a piece of owning a house, for instance, or perhaps a job guaranteed under a contract. I think that argument is not very strong, and the reason is that Abrahamson holds the position of Chief Justice because of the operation of a statute, and statutes changed. That is, it's not the situation where she was promised a judgeship and then it was rescinded, and it's also not the situation you have in some states where a person is elected directly to the position of Chief Justice. Either of those would be a different situation. In our situation, justices are elected to the Supreme Court in general, and then the process for deciding who is Chief Justice operates according to a statute. And changing that statute is not a regulatory action that deprives someone of a property interest in the traditional sense of that word.
And what she's challenging here, she's not saying, hey, overturn this constitutional amendment. She's saying, don't apply this constitutional amendment yet because I'm in the middle of my term as Chief Justice. Do I have that right?
You do, and that brings me to the second argument that she's raising, which is that the amendment is perfectly fine, but it shouldn't apply, as she would argue it, retroactively. And there's a couple of pieces to this argument. One is Chief Justice Abrahamson is arguing that voters who voted for the amendment understood that it would apply prospectively to the next time a chief justice is selected. She's also been joined in her lawsuit by several individual voters who say that when they voted for her reelection to the Supreme Court the last time around, they intended to vote for her to be chief justice. Again, I don't think these arguments are terribly strong. I think it would be very difficult to show that the bulk of voters in Wisconsin who voted for the referendum had really thought about the question of prospective or retrospective application. And the fact, you know, that one votes for a member of Congress hoping that he'll be the chair of a committee doesn't mean he has a right to be the chair of that committee, as Congress has proven many times over.
Now, I don't like to throw around the word unprecedented because I'm usually wrong when I say it, but it doesn't seem like this kind of thing comes up very much. Have there been similar cases like this in Wisconsin or around the country?
I'm not aware of a similar case like this anywhere. Now, I haven't researched that question in depth, so like you, I'm not 100%. I'm not at all certain that there's no other case like it, but I can tell you that I've never heard of one, and I've been studying this stuff for some time. It is, I think, crucial to keep in mind the background of all of this. I mean, this referendum was not adopted, did not come out of the air. This was a get Shirley Abrahamson measure. And it's part of the attempt by the conservatives to take complete control of the court. On the court itself, there's a 4-3 conservative majority. It's also the case that, for example, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce drafted a rule dramatically relaxing conflict of interest restrictions and saw to it that was adopted. That's the rule that's now allowing those four justices, or may allow those four justices, to rule on the case against Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce in connection with the Walker investigation. This is part and parcel of the process we've seen over the last 8 or 10 years of $8 million of outside money being funneled into Wisconsin judicial elections and Republican Party operatives and the Republican Party becoming directly involved in finding candidates and running their campaigns. In other words, this is of a piece the conservative effort to transform what was once widely regarded as a nonpartisan institution into another piece of policymaking apparatus along with the legislature and the governor's office. There's also, for example, a bill in the legislature to set an age limit on service in the Supreme Court, and that, too, is aimed directly at Shirley Abrahamson in the assumption that if she can be gotten rid of, she'll be replaced by someone more to their liking. Now, the fact that Anna Walsh Bradley was reelected on Tuesday, you know, suggests that that's not necessarily true. And when you adopt a new rule like this, the rule sticks around, right? We may easily find ourselves in a situation a few years down the road where a liberal majority in the court is voting out a conservative chief justice, or where heavy donors to liberal candidates come before the court, and the justice who received those donations is allowed to preside over their case because of these rules that Wisconsin Manufacturing and Commerce wrote. So in the long run, it's always a mistake to be willing to sacrifice the integrity of the institution for a partisan gain. But in the short term, that does seem to be exactly what's happening.
Talking to Howard Schwaber about the new way of choosing the state's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, just passed in referendum on Tuesday, and a challenge by the current Supreme Court Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson to the way that law would work. Well, Howard, let's talk a little bit about what's at stake here. There's a 4-3 conservative majority, as you mentioned. The Chief Justice doesn't get a bonus vote. Nope. So what extra special powers does the Chief Justice get?
That's right. I mean, we are not talking about dramatic substantive powers. As you say, the Chief Justice doesn't get two votes. And the fact of Chief Justice status does not mean that a case would come out, you know, one way rather than another way. At a personal level, she stands to lose $8,000 in salary, although there is also a bill in front of before the legislature to equalize Supreme Court justice salaries, so that would take that element away. The Chief Justice has a lot of administrative authority, and anyone who's ever worked in an office knows that whoever controls the administration of the office has a great deal of control over what happens there. The Chief Justice has a number of substantive duties or authorities, such as assigning judges to cases in certain circumstances and ruling on uncontested motions. But I think in some ways the biggest piece of this is that the Chief Justice is the public face of the court. And I think the conservatives on the court and Governor Walker and conservatives in the legislature who promoted this referendum measure want very much to have one of their own as the face of the court. And if I had to choose one thing that is most substantively at stake here, I think that's probably it.
There's been a lot of talk, more a couple years ago, about incivility, extreme incivility among Supreme Court justices here in Wisconsin. One argument made by people in support of this amendment is if we elect the justice, they'll have to make nice with people to get them to vote for him or her. This is a road to better, to a more civil Supreme Court in the future. Is there anything to that?
I think that's exactly wrong, honestly, although, again, only because of the particular context. I should back up a little bit. There are at least four ways that I know of that different state Supreme Courts select their Chief Justice. It can be an appointment by the governor. It can be elected by the other justices, which is the system we're moving to. It can be based on seniority. Or in some states, when the Chief Justiceship comes open, candidates run for that specific office. As I mentioned earlier, if we had that system, if Shirley Abrahamson had been elected to be Chief Justice, right, we'd be having a significantly different conversation at this point, I think. As for the effects on civility, you know, I think it's reasonably clear that what's been driving the incivility on the court is the increasing incivility of campaigns. Again, just 10 years ago, Wisconsin was considered to have one of the most honest, one of the least partisan, one of the least political Supreme Courts in the country. It's now regarded as one of the most vulnerable to corruption and the most politically partisan. And the reason has been a dramatic shift, particularly in the elections that resulted in Justices Gableman and Ziegler taking the bench. Those elections were brutal. And extremely partisan, and marked by advertising that was not merely highly negative, but in at least one case, arguably crossed the line into unethical. Interestingly, on Tuesday, we didn't see so much of that. Tuesday's election was certainly hard fought, and there was a fair amount of money poured into the election, but it didn't blanket the airwaves, and it didn't result in the kind of public bitterness that past elections have had. So it's possible that the voters in Wisconsin have sort of had enough of this circus. I very much hope that's the case. And just as I hope that voters in Wisconsin, you know, will think more about the integrity of their institution rather than their preferences, or as much as their preferences in the immediate term for policy outcomes. But what's driving the incivility is just the bitter polarization on the court itself. And as long as the process of candidate selection is so polarized and so politicized, I would not expect to find a return to the days of nonpartisan civility on the court itself.
Howard, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
My great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Howard Schwaber, professor of political science and legal affairs at UW-Madison, joining us to talk about Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson's legal challenge over the new process for selecting the state Supreme Court's Chief Justice.